Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I used it. You should go over there and start using it now.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Earn Your Leisure, Cali Edition, Hometown Heroes Edition, actually.
That's a fact.
I believe our guest is from the great city of Compton, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. City of Compton. So
this is something that I personally have been looking forward to for a while. I've checked this gentleman out online. I've been following him online and just a lot of clips that he puts out, different interviews and things of that nature. Just a real sharp, very sharp young man, and articulates himself very well and speaks very fast.
Well, yo, once he starts speeding, I tell you, when he starts speeding up, it's like, yo, yeah, hold on.
Yeah, so it's pretty dope to watch on Instagram. So the gentleman that I'm talking about is Reza Islam, and he's an activist, he's an author, humanitarian, social media influencer, all of the above entrepreneur, and just a very dynamic guy. So I actually reached out to him a couple months ago. And yes, but it was perfect timing. Nah, everything happened when it's supposed to happen. As you guys know, we're in California for the month, and we've been getting nothing but love, great treatment out here. And this might be the last interview that we actually do, so it's a fitting.
Make it count, man.
It's fitting. So I'm very
excited. LA been great to us.
Yeah, that's shout right. out to Cali, man. So I'm very excited to have this conversation. We're gonna talk about a variety of different things in regards to economics. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I'm honored, brothers. I'm honored. Again, like I said, it would have been sooner, but like you said, it all happens for a reason. I'm just thankful to be here, man.
That's a fact. Yes, that's sir. A fact. Yes, so let's kick it off. It's interesting because our platform is based on, economics, finances, business. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, shout out to Val, she's actually one of the people that inspired me to get into social media. And she was like, yo, I don't know if you are aware of this, but there's a whole movement on Black Twitter about how Black capitalism is actually bad and is not good. And she was like, I don't want your platform to not get ahead of this curve. Like, right. At the very least, y'all should address it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, we're open source platform. We don't mm-hmm. really take opinions. We give people different. And I'm like, I thought about it. I'm like, I personally might not subscribe to that, but let me hear. So mm-hmm. are you familiar with that sentiment? And what are your thoughts on Black capitalism? Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. First of all, capitalism is capitalism. That's just, plain and clear all the way around the board. But I'm not too familiar with it. I do know when it comes to capitalism and using the leverage of society for economic gains, depending on what it is, products, business, et cetera, it has its ups and downs. I know that. I know capitalism has been used for the majority in a negative way as it pertains to our people when it comes to what has been done to our people on the part of major businesses and corporations. So I know that, but then again, it can be used, in a good way, in a beneficial way, but it depends upon how you do it. And it has to be based on integrity and really caring for the people more than money. You see what I'm saying? So, that's, I'll leave it at that. That's pretty much all I can say on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel. I kind of feel like it's, everything in life is a balance.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and, we talk about capitalism, socialism. I think there's good and bad parts of everything. Mm-hmm. But, we're in a capitalistic society,
all
whether we
long.
Hate it or love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of like either participate or sit on the sideline, but the game is still going to be played.
Absolutely.
That's how
I don't know how you use it.
All right.
That's it.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of people, I think, speak about things that they might hear and mm-hmm. they don't really have a full understanding. Like me personally, I never really like to talk about stuff that I don't have a full understanding of.
Yeah, smart.
A, I don't want to just embarrass myself. And B, I don't want to spread false information.
Absolutely.
But you actually, you're a very knowledgeable guy. I can tell
you read a lot.
So,
best,
so when we talk about these things as far as the IMF and the International mm-hmm. Monetary System mm-hmm. and different banks and things of that nature, mm-hmm. can you give us a...
it's getting heated.
Okay, yes, sir. Can you give us a education on what that... Because like you said, you see that a lot. I see that a lot on social media and a lot of conspiracy theories. And, I'm one of these people where I hate conspiracy theories, but some of them are true.
Right, true.
Some of them
are true. There's got to be some truth in it.
Yeah. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. So how does that affect the day-to-day average working class person who's not at the top of the mountain as far as economics?
I'll say this. First of all, at this time, because we are in the age of information, which is, again, like you said, things have to be balanced. There is a good and there's a bad. Extremely on both ends now when it comes to this, because now people are literally living their lives based upon what they see.
That's a fact.
Okay, so they're going to run outside. Okay, wait, so COVID? All right, COVID. If I run outside butt naked, I'm going to get COVID. You're going to have somebody doing this.
That's a fact.
Is real talk. This is how dangerous
this thing is. That's a fact.
So you got to be careful, everybody, with what you post, first of all. Secondly, there are conspiracy documentarians. Okay, that's a shout out to Dr. Wesley Muhammad. People who actually have the documented evidence to back up what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more so on that area. Okay, where we're with the conspiracy documents, we're with the realists when it comes to what's really going on, but we stick away from all the conspiracy theories. I can sift through them, trust me when I say there are so many. There's so many.
It's a million.
It's far, bro. You will never get out of that rabbit hole. You'll be down in there.
Yeah,
all
nah, it's
night.
Crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, so be careful, you know, with what y'all.
No, I'm only saying it because like, we encountered one like a couple of weeks ago, and it was just like, yo, where did you get this from?
Come on, bro.
And I was like, all right, nah, we'll talk after this.
All right, I'll put it this way: conspiracy theorists. Pretty much, if they can cause controversy, can grab attention, they will. These are people who want to see. They're truth seekers for the majority. Some of them can go extremely overboard, wearing aluminum caps all day, you know, looking at you like, you know, are you a human? You a reptilian? You know what? I know you a clone? You all clones? You know, I mean, bro, it gets
real. Yeah,
it gets deep. So, and when you go into that realm, it really doesn't matter what color you are, black, white, whatever. People are just really in that realm. So I'll say be very careful of who you're listening to, and if you are a person with a large platform, be careful about
fact
what it
check.
Is you share.
Fact check. That's
important. At least 5 times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to cross reference. Now that's another thing when it comes to facts, you got to make sure you cross reference things, because sometimes things can sound really believable, bro, and depending on who says it, it can sound very convincing. We're charismatic, and I saw it yesterday. I saw it. You know, it's like, okay, I gotta believe them. It's like, no. Check it for yourself, because if you have influence over people, you will literally control their lives. And if they go out and do something and they hurt themselves, that's on your hands.
I mean, really,
we got to be responsible, yeah. Right? So just be careful with the conspiracy theories, but check things. You know, don't be what Ms. Farrakhan calls a lazy learner. Don't be a surface learner. If you really want to learn about that, you want to post it, okay, go take an extra 20, 30 minutes and really fact check it. If you're going to post it, don't just post it to get some damn views and likes, y'all. We got to stop being hoes for likes. Yeah,
yeah,
say that?
That's cool.
Stop being hoes for likes.
We've heard worse. We've heard worse.
It's real. We got to really pull away from that, because that's really what it is today, man. People just, those likes and views. And also, a lot of people sincerely want to help. That's another thing. A lot of celebrities, a lot of y'all are just starting to step into being an intellectual. So you're learning. And so you really like, man, I want to help my people who are following my 10, my 20, my 30 million followers. But be careful. I've seen some stuff from certain artists and celebrities, and I was like, what the hell did you just post? And I'll be like, if I can get in touch with them, I will. Yeah. You know, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to just publicly bash off people. That's another thing. Like, oh, y'all saw this crazy nigga sit.
Let me call you on the private line.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If you can, reach out to them personally, because they may not know.
Right.
There's a lot of celebrities, brother, who come to me for consulting about things because they really didn't know. And I tell them, no. That's not true. Let me send you the facts on that. And then they see it and like, oh man, I was about to make a big mistake on that one. You know, so we have to have enough love for one another to make sure we put out what is proper, what's right, what's factual, and with solutions, preferably, if you can. If it's another problem you're gonna post it with a solution if you can. Because that's another thing. Everybody right now, we know all the damn problems in the world, bro. It's so many negative things going on, but we need some positive to go with it, like you said, to keep that balance.
So the IMF, what's the deal with that?
International Monetary Fund. Okay, so here we go, y'all. Some of y'all know about this.
Pens
International out. Monetary Fund, you're talking about the organization that funds countries. They give loans out to countries, and they basically enslave countries. This is pretty much what they do. So they say, listen, you know, it's kind of like a rich pimp organization. I'm going to say it like that. It's not slander, damn it, it's what it is. So they go and loan money, and they say, this is your lump sum here, pay it back in increments of this amount, you know, every year, every month, whatever. And this is what you can use for whatever, you know, building your economy, building this, your businesses, etc., to stimulate it, whatever. And that's what they do. The issue is when they put a high level of interest on these things that is impossible for these countries to pay back. Now, as a part of the agreements, if they default or if they break the agreement, then there are other options that kick in. Okay, well, we can take control of your ports. We can take control of your airports. We can take control of this or that if you default on the loan. You see what I'm saying? This mm-hmm. is the criminal stuff that they do. And they've done it to countries all throughout Africa and all throughout the world. They know what they're doing. You know, them along with the other banks, international banks, and who loan money at high interest to control foreign nations and foreign leaders, to get them under the control and under the umbrella of those who they control. So then you'll see other countries and nations doing some crazy as hell stuff to their citizens and to their people and all that, but it's like, it's not them. They're being controlled, and now the people who own them are now writing their policies. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the power behind economics. You got to understand what's going on. And you'd have to be like Fidel Castro in Cuba. You have to stand on integrity and say, I'd rather not take nothing from you and stand on integrity for my people. He was willing to do that. And of course, America put sanctions on him, wouldn't allow other countries to help them. Right. They're still recycling cars from the 60s and the 70s, bro.
Fact.
They still doing that. Yeah. They're like, hold on, don't throw that away. What you doing? We can put that here. Don't. You know, it's a serious thing because they have that much integrity. We will not be pimped. We will not be enslaved, you know, for a foreign nation that does not have our interest. Our best interest. So, you know, that's really what the IMF does and what it is. Has it done some good? I'm sure it has done some good. The issues that when you have people at that level, it's usually backed by special interest groups who have a wicked intent, and they have demonstrated that in what they do to our countries.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That was in a nutshell, man. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Make sure you study more. There's a lot more information to learn about it, but definitely.
And it sounds, I'm interested to get your take on, because what you said a lot sounds like what China is currently doing all over the world. And it's interesting because we spoke about China, especially like what they're doing in Africa and the Caribbean. And but we spoke to an entrepreneur in Nigeria. Like, he's actually lives in Nigeria. And I asked him, like, you know, what's your thoughts on it? He's like, honestly, you know, China's doing what's in the best interest of China, but it's business at the end of the day. It's not like nobody's coming and putting a gun to anybody's head and making them do this and things of that nature. So they was like, you know, we have to, you know, kind of have some accountability, leadership, and the public, and things of that nature. So how do you feel about that? Because that's another hot topic as far as China.
I'm glad you said that as it pertains to what the brother who lives in Nigeria said, because a lot of the leaders have been bought out. That's another thing that people really got to understand when they say, well, China, China, China. It's like, hold on, first of all, many of the African leaders have been bought out. They have literally taken the money from China, just like they took money from America, just like they took money from other nations, Europe, etc., to allow them to come in and do whatever it is they want to do with the different agreements, whatever those agreements may be. The issue is that many people in Africa, and I meet with a lot of them, I've been awarded by a number of African organizations, international organizations, for my humanitarian work and my activism. They tell me to my face, they say, brother, you need to understand that a lot of our leaders have sold out. They have, and they hate it, brother. They're like, we do our best to stand as a people, to stand as, you know, I'm Zimbabwean, or I'm Ghanaian, or I'm Nigerian, but then some of them are just like, well, this is a new world, it's a new time. You know, it's a new time. You know, if they want to come in and give us money, fine. They don't look at the fact that you can pull your resources together, you live, you have the wealth under your feet. You see what I'm saying? You can access that, and you can use it independently to work with your other African brothers and African nations. But again, because you have a outside foreign power that has come in and has divided you from one another, has come in, usurped your power, killed your leaders, put in CIA agents in the place of certain leaders. This is America's foreign policy, because that also has a lot to do with economics. You definitely want to look at that. You have to read a book by the name of The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, where they talk about how they set up coups to get rid of
foreign leaders.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they do that.
The Shah of Iran, they set the problem.
They did it with Libya, they did it with Iraq. They did any nation that does not agree with the foreign policies to allow them to have access to the wealth.
Libya with money. Colonel Gaddafi.
Oh yeah, with Colonel Muammar Gaddafi.
Can you talk about that?
Oh, I will. Oh yes, sir.
Okay.
Whatever you need, brother. I'm just saying, get ready for it. I'll say it again this way. The African leaders who have not sold out, we thank you. Stand strong, brothers, because I know a lot of you who follow my network and this network and other networks, you're watching, you're listening. You have to maintain integrity. Menas Farrakhan said, stand strong. If you must die on that, then you must die on that, but stand strong for the people, for Africa, for the nation, for us as a diaspora. Do not sell out to this enemy because they do not have our best interests at hand. They don't. They don't care about us. That's the point. China has their own interests, like you said. It's China. And if it's business, you agree to it. It's business. So I can't argue with that. However, a lot of nations in Africa now, a lot of countries are now they rethinking that. Now they're trying to come out of deals. Now they're trying to figure out a way to get around it. Like, okay, you know, we didn't read this section of this part of this subsection in the agreement.
It's like a record contract.
Oh, yeah, yeah, man. And, you know, them 360 deals. Yeah,
they got it for the country.
Got the advance.
You called your lawyer 2 years later. You're like, nah, did you know about that?
No, I'm going to need my country back.
Bro, seriously. Like, oh, damn, y'all got me. I didn't know that. You know, bringing that independent, what is it called, audit. Those auditors. So that's what's happening now. But again, if we stand strong, if you make the agreements with China, you're going to have to go along with the agreement or find a way to get out of it. But we have to stand strong as a people. At the end of the day, we must do for self or suffer the consequences. We have the power. We have the wealth. We just need the unity. That's all we need. Okay, so that's all I really got to say on that, because at the end of the day, a lot of those countries really did get involved willingly. And that's the issue. And I'm not saying anything negative about China, because it's business. Yeah. And I will never say China is worse than America. So let's never get that twisted. Because people are like, China, stop it. We still dealing with stuff in America right now. From Breonna Taylor all the way down, that's being murdered. China ain't out here killing black folk. Okay. All right, so let's just make that clear. But and everybody else when it comes to that type of situation. But Libya now, you sure you want to go into that? It is economics, brother. He did a beautiful job. You know, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, may Allah be pleased. First of all, I don't listen to Western media about foreign leaders. That's the first thing. I don't listen to what America has to say about a Libyan leader, America has to say about a Mexican leader, Hawaiian leader, Chinese, because again, America has their own interests, just like China has their own, everyone has their own. So I'd rather listen to their media, because they do have media. Some of y'all don't know Africa has buildings and cars. Man, we be tripping, bro. We really be tripping. Oh, they still living in huts, brother? Stop showing them commercials with little children with their stomachs out with flies on them.
Yeah, feed a kid for a dollar.
I mean, come on, man. If y'all don't knock this, 2020.
We got to stop.
Bro, the technology, come on. So I had to say that because people really be tripping. But in Libya, under Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, it was free. That's an old song. There was free healthcare. There was free education. When you got married, he would give the family anywhere between $5,000 to $25,000 for getting married. If you wanted to till land and grow your own food, they would give you a tractor, give you seeds, and give you a certain plot of land for you to grow your own food. If you wanted to go to school in a foreign nation or to another country, go abroad, Libya would sponsor that. They would pay for your room and board. They would pay for the tuition in whatever country you went to. All of these things America ain't doing.
No debt.
So it's kind of like.
No debt, right?
No debt.
Come on, bro.
As a country.
Free healthcare? Free. And I'm not saying that free horrible. Free good healthcare. Before Colonel Muammar Gaddafi took over the leadership of Libya, it was the poorest country. After he took over the leadership and started to work on it, it became the most wealthy country in Africa, had zero debt. It owed no one. The IMF, it didn't owe any other foreign countries, European countries. No, they were free of debt, debt free. See, that right there, that lets me know, no wonder they attacked him, called him a dictator. You know, so he's a horrible this and horrible that, but wait a minute, he's doing for his people what America claims she's doing for hers. You're not doing any of this. You're not even doing a 30th of what they're doing. So it's like, how can you be so hypocritical to even try to open your mouth and talk about a leader over there who's actually giving his people these different things that you say you're giving yours? Nah, that's not how that goes. So he built it into an economic power that was independent, and he was going to come together with the other over 53 countries in Africa to create a joint currency.
African Union.
An African Union.
Yeah.
Which, bro, when you're talking about money and economics, that is the most powerful move that could have ever been done on the planet. Because then they would bankrupt the European pound, they would bankrupt the American dollar, they would bankrupt the Chinese yuan, they'd bankrupt every other form of currency, because you are backing your wealth based off of the mineral resources underneath your feet. And Africa got all of them.
Yeah, it's gold content.
Everybody gonna bow down to the African currency. And they was like, hell no, we're not gonna do that. Hell no, we're not gonna do that. We are not gonna have no niggas on no paper. And I'm gonna have to use that. I'm just being real, okay? We're not gonna have that.
Yeah.
You know, and again, because a lot of people know about this, but a lot of people didn't. And that we don't understand that when it comes to economics and money, color becomes less important at the top. There's some black people who's helping to push evil. There's some Arabs doing it. There's some Chinese. There's some white. There's a lot of people at the top. And that color line becomes less important. It becomes power now.
That's what Dame Dash
said. In my head, I'm like,
he said it in a different language than you said.
Oh, yeah.
Same message.
But he said
just said differently.
He said the same thing.
Same exact thing.
Yeah. Power only respects power. So if I got a billion and you got a billion, we can sit at the table. But if I'm black and you white, okay, well, it's like, okay, well, we want to buy this.
Right.
I don't give a damn about your color right now. Even if I did, it don't matter. We talking about money.
We're talking
right
about
now.
Some money.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying?
This was a history lesson. So speaking of economics, because I suppose you prior to this, but can we talk about the internal banking families of Europe?
Oh, man.
Can we give a history of that? And so that when I talked about the young gentleman who came, he was speaking about some theories. They came up, and I was just like, that's interesting because I've never heard him talk like that before. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, he doesn't have all the knowledge. So can you enlighten us all?
Oh, yeah. I'll give a little bit here. First of all, people try to argue and say that it is a conspiracy theory when you are talking about David Rockefeller, when you're talking about the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. This is actual fact. There's nothing, there's no theoretical anything behind it. They met off the coast of Jekyll Island of Georgia. They met off the coast on a small island. You're talking about David Rockefeller and some other individuals to come up with a way where they could take control over the monetary policies of America. The Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the United States Constitution. It states in the United States Constitution that Congress shall hold the right to print the money and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. But who is the Federal Reserve? They have nothing to do with America. They are a gangster group, a third party, mm-hmm. who came in and they took over these banking systems from Europe, and then they gradually moved into the rest of the planet. By the time they got to America, that's when 1913 came along with the passing of the Federal Reserve Act. And once that happened, all of the power to print money, coin money, etc., turned over into the Federal Reserve and no longer Congress. It used to say a silver certificate at the top of the dollar. Mm. It said silver certificate, meaning, oh, this is backed by silver. Okay. Or it was backed by gold.
Right.
Okay. But then it switched to Federal Reserve Note. What the hell does that mean? And now the money system is not under the people, it's not under Congress, it's not under our control per se, it's under the control of a third party gangster group organization that uses it to control and enslave the planet. That's what that is about. Hence why the economy is so high. They use war to make money. But if they use the war to make money, then the dollar goes further into debt, therefore having less worth, higher inflation. Mm-hmm. So what a dollar's worth today ain't nothing. It's nothing compared to what it was back then.
Yeah.
You know, America currently on Wall Street, they're saying it's a little over $22, $23 trillion in debt. Well, no, that's not true. They're not adding in Medicaid, Medi-Cal, all those things, the IOUs that they have for all these other nations. America's over $70 trillion in debt, and it's growing every day. They're printing millions every day, which means you print more, the money becomes less and less and less and less and less valuable. That's why also people need to start looking at gold, hence why gold is so high right now.
Yeah, all-time high this week.
You know what I'm saying? All-time high, silver is going up, even though some people say, I don't buy silver, but the pre-1933 silver coins in particular, you should be buying, because those are worth about, I think it costs about $23, $25 per coin, so you want to get some of those. Why? Because the dollar, brother, is about to become completely obsolete. It's about to get to a point like it got over in Europe where they were having piles of it in the middle of the street. You know, they was burning, you know, smoking cigars, lighting with the money. I know some of y'all like, man, ain't gonna happen. Listen, bro. They're talking about this economic gap because of the pandemic. Nearly 40 million people were unemployed just a couple months ago.
Right.
In America. So you're gonna give a stimulus check to 40 million people. You're not gonna give $10 to 40 million people. You see what I'm saying? So you're giving millions, billions, trillions that you don't have to people who are not working, and then you shut it down again, which is why, you know, Trump and everyone else wanted to open it up. They're like, listen, it don't matter if people get sick.
Yeah,
either we going down economically or we going down physically and health-wise, we got to choose one. So right. They'd rather open up the economy, let some people get sick and die, but to allow us the economy to thrive and survive because it is upside down.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? That's what it is. So, but it all started, again, with the international banking families of Europe, and then, of course, pushing for war to make more money, sending people to die, more war, more money, more interest, et cetera, et cetera. And that is what it has been since 1913.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people might not realize, like you said, that the Federal Reserve Bank is not a government agency.
No.
It's just Fed. It's like
literally.
It's like FedEx. Like, it's just like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Just you would just automatically think it's federal and they print money. And they, so just by default, you would think, okay, it's part of the government, but it's actually not part of the government at all.
Not at all.
And it's interesting.
Not at all, bro. Anybody who's dealing with economics, I mean, this is the show y'all watch. You know, y'all watch these brothers. They give you the game. They give you as much game as possible. That was possibly some of the most important game they could give you, is to understand the difference between the Federal Reserve and the government when it comes to money, the monetary system. That's why Bitcoin is so important. Some people talk about that, the economists in America will say all kinds of crap because it's not controlled. It's a universal currency. You can't control it. You can transfer it anywhere. So they're like, no, it's bad because we want y'all to stick with the American dollar. Nah, hell no, nah, player. We know what's going on with that dollar. That dollar's gone. That's done for. Okay, so now you have to look at other forms of currency and be very wise about looking at other currency, investing in other currency, and moving your money around. Really, y'all gotta start pulling your stuff out of the bank in a minute. I ain't trying to go against what y'all. I don't know. I'm just saying. Any thoughts you got on that, you know, you let me know. But be very mindful. Just understand that, you know, don't put all of your money in one location that is controlled by the Federal Reserve or any of its banks.
Yeah, no, you know that's what? What you know what? Hey, I don't know if people will notice, but there's a shortage of coins.
That's been all over.
Interesting. And B, the bank thing is interesting because it's like, all right, what's the odds of bank having not enough money until they don't have enough money? Because
people start taking their money.
In Greece a few years ago, they shut the banks down. They made a stop on ATM run because people was trying to. So it's like, theoretically, like if you have $10 million, the bank doesn't have $10 million. That's why they only insure $250,000. Mm-hmm. So if you go.
Ooh, we dropped that one. Go ahead.
Like you literally can't. You literally can't. Yeah, it's the FDIC insured. So you could literally only take up to a certain amount, and then they got to like actually order other, because there's regional banks for the Federal Reserve. Like there's Federal Reserve regional banks like St. Louis, New York, LA, like there's different regions. So they have to order the money. Mm-hmm. And then this is kind of a more involved conversation, but that kind of goes with the interest rates, right? Because they charge the regular retail banks money to actually borrow. So when they lower the interest rates or when they raise the interest rate, it all comes into play.
They're making money off your money.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the things that was, I mean, a lot of people said that to us, and hopefully people get the message, but like money is a tool to get assets, right? It's having it sitting in the bank doesn't mean anything. I know like Fernando had told us that, and it stuck in my mind when you just said that. It was like, yo, every dollar is a worker to me. So I got to put that money to work.
You got to put it to work.
You have to, and let it make money for you. You know, that's where the investments and the assets come in. Own something that builds and its value increases in its worth. That's what we have to look at. Again, most of the people in the hood, y'all like, look, I got $40, bro, for the next week. Okay,
that's a fact.
$40, $50 for the next week.
That's a fact.
What can I do with this? That's why we have to now pull our resources. We don't have a choice, bro. We have to practice group economics. There is no choice here. There's none. Most of the people in the hood don't have $200 to their family. And I know it may sound crazy for some people. It's like, no, seriously.
That's a fact.
Even the money that we do have, we're spending it in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. But we have to now look at, okay, what can we afford to put in a pot, depending on what block we're on, depending on what hood we're from, the hoods. Y'all got to come together and start putting money in the pot, whatever crib hood, blood hood, essays, whatever, and start putting your dollars together so everyone can work a little and no one would have to work a lot, and then you can start buying up things.
You know, it's crazy. I feel like we're the only people that have to be convinced about group economics, because everything else, because like I went to this Indian wedding, a friend of mine is Indian, it's my first time going to an Indian wedding. So it's a whole week experience. If you ever been to an Indian wedding, it's like, and he was Sikh. So they had like a, it was like a whole thing. So the long story short is like where he lives in New Jersey, like that's where like the whole town is all Sikhs. And they have an interesting thing where they own like motels.
Yep.
They own like 100 motels.
Come on, bro.
And and then like he was explaining to me the process. So it's like one person from India comes, they buy a hotel, then they send enough money for the next person to come, and then they work in the hotel, they learn the business of the hotel.
Listen.
And then the other people give them money to start their hotel. When they get enough money, they pay it back, and then it's like a whole thing, and they just run it back again. So I see that in other cultures, and it's just like, it's interesting to me because that's group economics.
That's group economics.
But for us, it's still something that we kind of have to really be convinced and understand. So how do we get away from that mindset and really move into make it normal, like make group economics normal?
One, it has to be promoted and it has to be talked about more by those of us that practice it in a positive way. We gotta brag about that. Like, yeah, bro, I put my family on. Like, I said this way, this book was edited. It was written by me, black man. Then it was edited by black woman. Then my product manager, black woman, which is my sister. Then her two sons, they are employed as the packagers. So we employed them. Then I have my mother, and I have, I think, two cousins who also work for me. I employ my own family. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Black women for the majority, but black people, period. That's it. I said, I'm not about to employ nobody else. I'm employing my family. I'm going to free y'all up so that we can invest in each other, and then we can go ahead and build on something else, and we are building on something else now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's how it's supposed to be. I'm not playing no games out here. There's a lot of black people and families who are doing this.
There's great pride in that.
Come on, bro. And see, I'm going to say it again. We're doing that right now. And yeah. You have to be, you know, it's we don't trust each other, bro.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
can we can stimulate each other's economy even all with us. Yeah. Like, so they see me and Troy as the host of Earn Your Leisure, but it's more than us. So we have Mike, who does all of our technical stuff. So we all grew up together. Another one of our friends, Jamal, he just left, but he's the head of our marketing. See? So then Mike's brother is like, he edits, because I write, but I'm not the best with grammar. Mm-hmm. So he's our editor for our writing. And then his other brother actually edits our videos. He DJs our live events. So it's like, why would we pay somebody else? We could stimulate each other. We all come from the same neighborhood. Exactly. So now we're stimulating each other's economy. And ultimately, it's only going to come back to all of us anyway. That's and make right. all of us stronger.
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to, you know, work with this person and that person. And it's like, by before you know it, like, you don't even understand what's going on. And I feel like people will take more pride, and they'll go the extra mile, because now it actually makes sense, where it's like his brother's going to work harder for him because he wants him to be successful.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not just a random person who you just outsource, and it's like, I'll get to it when I can get to it.
Man, I'll say two things on this. First of all, we as a people have to be willing to work. That's the part. Like, we got to be real about this. This is where the accountability comes in.
That's a big fact. That is a big
playing,
one.
Man. Yeah. If I put you on, be on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't give me a bad name. I'm doing my best to keep this thing afloat. Don't come in and be like, man, where the bag? I'm just trying to get the bag. Like, you can't get, it's plenty of bags. We're talking like it's only one bag.
That's a fact.
Like, no, you got to keep adding to the, okay, we're going to give you a bag. It's going to be empty at first.
Yeah.
And you're going to add to it. I'm going to switch a lot of rappers be talking, man, because y'all be tripping.
Yeah.
No, it's, you're going to add to it. And us as a people, we are the bag. That's what we got to get through our head. We are
the value.
It's come on, bro. It's the value. We have to add to that. So we add to that piece, and we have to be prideful or proud and thankful and happy to work for one another. If I'm working with my brother, I'm working with my brother. And we have to treat the people that work with us fairly too.
Right.
So we got to have love. We got to have respect. We have to have trust. One major reason why we don't trust when it comes to money is really a traumatic thing that has been passed down generationally as a part of what happened with us with the Freedmen's Bank. The Freedmen's Bank, when black folks, we were technically slaves, but then not, whatever, and we became free, et cetera, we were putting our money in the Freedmen's Bank. Okay, so we were putting our money in there and our savings and all that, and after a certain point, they just took all our money.
Goodbye.
And they're like, but no, you can't get your money back. Nah, that's it, boom. So our money's gone. Now they're like, we're like, okay, hold on. So we were rushing now. Hearing about that, rushing to just take whatever our money, take it out and just spend it. Just spend it, because they're going to take it from me, so I got to spend it to get some assets, something physical. You know, so now I have to, it's a traumatic thing. That's why we just spend. We don't save, because we think, damn it, if I don't buy something, I'm going to lose it. That's really, it's a deep traumatic thing that happens, with, especially in the hood. We got to buy the sneakers, we got to buy the necklace, we got to buy this, not realize most of that jewelry is fake. A lot of y'all rappers. I'm not talking about ones that I know personally. It's insane.
Not y'all.
It's real. You know, and so we don't want to give our people this fake hope of aspirations in something that doesn't add value, doesn't add wealth, doesn't build up us as a people. And really, when you're putting people on, when you're buying up land and real estate and you're going into technology and business and all of that, it takes time, but it is the most long lasting. That little quick dollar ain't nothing. It is how long, it's the longevity, the consistency can you create, which will create generational wealth, like motels and stuff like that, brother. That's never ending.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And that's families that do that, families, and they eating for the rest of their life. I'm tired of this whole get the bag. No, bro, I want to get the business.
Yeah.
Get the business, okay? And then build from there and just keep going until, you know, we achieve that generational wealth.
Yeah, so speaking about rappers, and obviously get the bag, is that's one of the slangs. Yeah, what are your thoughts on the accountability and responsibility that they have? Because, I mean, I feel like you might be just like a generation below us when it came to the music. We always talk about how it raised us. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, generation?
Rappers, people listen to y'all. This is what we have to get through our head. The children listen to what rappers say, no matter what you say. Sibling Percocet. Okay, they're going to sibling the Percocet. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's what you do as an influencer. Most people who are rappers, you know, they like, look, I didn't sign up to be no leader. Yeah, you did, sadly. You did. The moment you decided to be in front of people, you in front of people. And people like what you say, so they 9 times out of 10 are going to want to do what you say to do. They're going to want to act like how you act, dress how you dress, go where you go. That's what it is. If I'm interested in you, I see what you got on. I like that because I like you. Mm-hmm. It's the personality attached to it. I like the personality. I want to be like the personality. It's a psychological game that we have to understand that we're playing. So you got to be very accountable when you're doing what you're doing. Just the athletes, the rappers, the actresses, the actors, everybody. Got to be accountable because people are watching you. So regardless of whether or not you feel like you signed up to be a influencer or a leader, you are that. Now, are you doing it properly? Maybe not. But you have to understand, people are going to follow what you do and what you say. So we just got to take responsibility for that, bro.
So you're a member of the Nation of Islam.
Yes, sir.
So I was talking off camera as far as I don't think that the Nation of Islam, people really understand as far as one of the founding principles of it was an economic structure. Mm-hmm. Like it had, when it first started in the 60s, even 50s, you know, a lot of restaurants.
Yes.
It was importing fish, I believe, from Peru.
Yep.
With boats and trucks.
That's right.
Farms, mm-hmm. schools. Mm-hmm. That was like a whole thing, and the slogan was like, do for self.
That's right.
So economics was always a big part of it. So can you enlighten the people on that? Because like I said, they might have heard about the Nation of Islam. They might have had some preconceived notions, but they might not have known that part as far as the business structure.
Absolutely. Well, I'll say this. When it comes to our people, you know, when it comes to us as a group, the number one thing is to make sure you keep our people economically undermined, disenfranchised, keep them out of the market, make sure we don't have the ability to access capital, large amounts of money so that we can do for self. That's been the overall agenda of this system. However, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad came up with something called the economic blueprint, where he said 5 cents a day, 35 cents a week, less than $20 a year. And we all pour that money and pool it together so that we can have a practicing group economic system where we can buy our own farmland, where we can establish our own businesses, et cetera, et cetera. So he started that, and the do for self or suffer the consequences is specifically what he said. He learned a lot of what he learned from when it comes to economics from the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, with the entire, you know, the movement under the Garveyite movement, which was very successful, as we all know. So by implementing this, the Nation of Islam rose, as I said, not only with farms, as you brought up, importing fish, schools, businesses. We had sewing companies, you know, clothing companies, all these things, and of course, employing all of our own people. Mm-hmm. And it grew into an over $80 million economy with the Nation of Islam alone. Hmm. Talking about in the 60s.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So the do for self still stands today. We still practice that today. We actually, when the government came in and pretty much destroyed everything, removed our schools, removed everything, you know, arrested a lot of the people, they did not want it to be known that there was an independent group of black people, intelligent thinkers, peaceful people, but you're not going to mess with us, you know, but we are peaceful, mm-hmm. who are doing for self and establishing our own everything, just how everyone else is doing. Chinese are doing it, Indians are doing it, Jewish people are doing it, and the issue was that for us in particular, because we wanted to separate and establish our own everything, that became a problem. So we still have it today, schools, we have farms.
Security.
Mm-hmm. Oh, security all day long. Yeah. Right?
We'll get there. We'll get there.
You gotta secure what you own. People, you know, getting it twisted out. Yeah. You know, but we have a lot of these things still established. We have the number one black news publication in the world, the Final Call newspaper.
Yep.
Independently, you know, produced, published, and promoted by us with local, national, and international news about different topics and subjects, including economics. You know, so yeah, man, it's a beautiful thing. It was a larger circumstance back then, but once it came down, we of course resurrected it, and now we are still gone.
How did you said the government kind of squashed it, or
mm-hmm. yeah?
How did that go?
And what time? What's the time frame we're talking about?
Oh yeah, you're talking about in the late '60s, early '70s, where they came in. Of course, when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad departed in the mid 1970s. That's when a lot of different things started happening. Businesses started shutting down. They started to go in. You know, certain people left and became discouraged. You know, once you feel that your leader has departed, it's very, you know, disheartening. It's heartbreaking. So a lot of people left the businesses. A lot of businesses shut down. A lot of companies started to buy out businesses and companies. The schools, they were arresting the teachers of the Muhammad University at the time because we fought to have independent schooling. In large part in America, it's because of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that independent schooling even exists. Mm-hmm. Him, Sister Claire Muhammad, that was something that we fought for, because he said if our people want to learn education about us, we must be taught by our own, just how everyone else does that. So again, that was a problem. So these are different components that the government came in and said, we're gonna take that, remove that, buy that out, et cetera, you know, arrest these people, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a large pool. And economically, that was a major thing, that they said, we're going to snatch this. And they try to come up with things saying, well, this is done illegally and this is illegal, and we're going to take this and taxes and whatever. You know, they just tried to find any way to destroy the base and the foundation. So they were successful partially, but again, because of Minister Farrakhan and all the work of the believers at that time in the late 70s and the 80s, we were able to resurrect it and reestablish everything. We're still coming back up, but we were seriously able to come back after something that usually is devastating.
Now, I heard you say before you were born into the nation. Can you talk about that journey? Because I know that you've been studying and obviously teaching as well, but mm-hmm. I know you went into political science in college. Yeah. What's that journey been like for you?
I'll say this, being born, first of all, in Compton, the youngest of 10 children, you said 12.
Yeah, I was like,
man. Add it to it. Man, we got some big families. Yeah. So I'm the youngest of 10 children, 5 boys, 5 girls. And growing up in Compton, we went to Muhammad Mosque number 54.
In Compton?
In Compton. Okay. That's the Compton Mosque. So I was praying in Arabic before I prayed in English. I was waking up 5 a.m., washing, you know, my hands, feet, ankles for ablution and all that, praying on the rug with the compass on it. I didn't even know what I was saying when I was 2 and 3 years old, but that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
All of our last names are Islam, so that's real interesting. Mm-hmm. Going to the airport right now. seriously. But being born into it, man, it was a different lifestyle because we were all known. Our house was known as the Muslims. Like, we was known as those, the Muslims in the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So everything was cool. You came around our house, everybody was cool, respectful. They saw us walk down the street. Oh, them the Muslims. Don't give them no pork. You know, like that's how it was funny, but that's how it was when we grew up. That was the lifestyle. You know, it was a beautiful thing. And so from that point, up until about the age of 7 or 8 is when I was practicing, going to the mosque, et cetera. Our stepfather, who was the one that brought us into Islam, was arrested and brought to jail. Mm-hmm. So when he was taken to jail, family collapsed, different things happened. You know, gang banging was something that occurred with some of my brothers and some of my family cousins.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest sister was she ended up on Skid Row on crack cocaine for about 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So she's still alive, thankfully. She made it through. She's clean, and I'm thankful for that. But this is the circumstances that were happening around our family. So at that point, no one was going to the mosque anymore. So it was just me and my mother. And then from there, we actually went into the Christian church because she was going to a program when she was a naturopathic doctor, et cetera, and she was having her people go to this program, her clients. And at that program, she met up with a Christian pastor. And so they were doing things, working out a lot of, you know, situations for different patients and stuff like that. And, you know, I said, well, this is where we're going to be at. I was like 19 years old. So she said, okay, well, you know, this is where we're going to be at, et cetera. And I was learning the Bible at that point. So I started learning the Quran, mm-hmm. et cetera, praying in Arabic, in a nation. Then I'm now in the Christian church for a certain period of time. Then after that, boom, circle all the way back. Now I'm back in the nation. Like, that's how literally, just in a nutshell, that's pretty much how I went.
Have all your other siblings, have they come back to the nation, or?
They love the nation, but to my knowledge, none of them are in a mosque,
okay.
To my knowledge. But most of them, they live in different states, different cities. Still got the last name Islam, say Assalamu Alaikum. They're like, look, we Muslim. We, you know, we love the nation, love the minister. It is what it is. You see what I'm saying? So whether you're in the building or not, Islam is right here. So the building is not where, the building isn't what makes you a Muslim.
Right.
It's what you practice. It's how you live your life. That's what it is. So, you know, that's why I love my family, man. That's why we all tight like that.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting, especially on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I feel like, just in general, but like, from Ice Cube, like it's been influences in the music as far as with the Nation of Islam specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt like, you know, it had a stronghold as far as like, you know what I mean? Like even I saw you with Nip before he passed, rest in peace. Like I know he had ties and, you know, I think you did some security for him before, right?
Yes, sir.
How was that experience?
Man, I think this is the first interview I was asking about Nip, man. That's a funny, telling you, brother. He was, when I met him, first of all, it was for Carl Kanai pop up, not far from it was over here off of Fairfax.
Okay.
And it was the 90s collection. And Nip came in there, we were on his detail. And he was a tall brother, first of all. People don't know, he was a tall brother. I was taller than him, but he was a tall brother. All right. And he wasn't no joke, he was very humble. He talked to everybody, shook everybody's hand, how you doing, you know, et cetera, boom, boom, boom. And when he spoke to me, he was just like, man, I love y'all brothers, man. Y'all always looking out for us. Y'all always been in the hood. I learned a lot from y'all. That's why I rock with y'all. He just kept saying I love Ms. Farrakhan. That's like y'all are always in the hood. Mm-hmm. The only ones I see always in the hood. Not saying that, you know, other organizations are not. There's a lot of groups that are. He was just saying, you know, I rock with y'all. And he learned the economic piece because a lot of people were saying,
definitely.
Get all that.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's
you
a
know,
fact.
Oh, yeah, bro. He studied Message to the Black Man, which is a book that he gave T.I.
Yep.
T.I. asked him, okay, what book do you recommend? Like, which one first? He said, Message to the Black Man. Read that one. And in there, it goes over the economic blueprint. So he would get mentored by the Western Region representative of the Nation of Islam, whose former name is Minister Tony Muhammad. His name now is Abdul Malik Saeed Muhammad. So he would be his mentor. He was mentoring him for about a good over 7 years. And he would call him, ask him questions about economics, about business, about, you know, the brotherhood, and just get advice on being a man, et cetera. So that economic piece and him going out and studying Bitcoin, all that kind of stuff, was in large part because of the Nation and what he was learning from what we were doing. You see what I'm saying? So just him as a brother, man, it was a powerful thing being around him. He was very intelligent. That's another thing. People really be sleeping on the hood, man. I mean, they really think we ignorant out here. I'm from Compton. You know, he's L.A. He's Eritrean, and he's out in L.A. It's a lot of brothers and sisters coming out the hood. You're all from New York. And so when people see us, it's very interesting how they approach you.
Yeah.
Because they really think you don't know a damn thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, I got a lot of knowledge down here. You know, like, really don't play with me.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's how he was. He wasn't flamboyant. He wasn't boastful. You know, but if you try to test him, he'll flex on you. So he like let you know, no, I know something, bro. You know,
yeah.
Sit down. But he would more so show it rather than talk it.
Yeah.
And that's something I really respect about the brother. He was just consistent, did the work, and he built an empire that really employed a lot of people in the hood.
That's a fact. I that's one of the quotes that you said. You said that the greatest soldiers sometimes come from the worst areas.
Yes, sir.
And so you made a concerted effort to go back into these areas.
Yes.
I saw on your Instagram, so I had to talk about it because when you were in Chicago, drove by. O'Block, and we're like, yo, that's O'Block.
Oh, yeah.
But I saw you inside there, and like you said, when you see people from the Nation, it's just a certain level of respect that you give. What was that experience like?
O'Block, bro, first of all, the security guard looked at us like he was crazy. He's like, y'all trying to come in here? We all suited. He's like, y'all know where y'all at? Like, y'all coming in here? He was like, yeah, this O'Block. He was like, yeah. Like, you coming in here? Like, so now he's looking at us like, what y'all bringing in here? Yeah. He suited. Some drugs. I'm like, oh, bro, come on, man. You know, like, come on.
This ain't the wire.
Yeah, exactly. Right. 48. He like, no, okay, cool. All right, I see. Y'all the brothers. He said, y'all got a park over there, and y'all can walk through. You know, we're not letting nobody drive in right now because of the whole COVID and security and all that stuff. So we go in. First thing we see is five children playing outside. First thing you think when they talk about Chicago is, don't nobody want to be outside. Everybody's shooting, man. It's don't nobody like nobody. It's a jungle out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing we see is five children playing outside, smiling, little children.
Yeah.
And you see three elders, one sister sitting down with her baby, who's a 2-month-old, smiling, just playing with the baby. Another brother was sweeping grass. Now, I don't know what that meant. But he was sweeping grass. I was like, okay, brother.
Yeah, you got to paint the whole picture.
Man, do you think? I got, like, you know, you asked me a question. I can let you we walked up to them. We just talking to him because, like, man, it's a lot of love right here in this area. As soon as we walk in, we're just talking to him, asking him about this neighborhood, et cetera. And the elders were saying, well, no, man, out here on the outskirts, they say you got the gate in the front, and right on the inside of that, you know, the first layer is the front, which is cool. He said, there's a lot of us elders here, and ain't nothing going on. He said, where you really need to go is up the middle.
Mm.
He said, up the middle. He said, go straight down, turn right. He said, y'all got that piece on you, though, right? That's what he answered. He's like, he said, now, if y'all going to go up the middle, he said, that's where it really go down. That's where all the crazy stuff is and everything. We said, okay, that's where we want to go.
Yeah.
He said, well, no, just make sure y'all got that thing on you, right? He said, yeah, brother, we got what we need. We good. So we walked and went up the middle, and the first thing we see, some brothers sitting in the car smoking, eating, some sisters over there. And we heard some dirt bikes and everything. We're like, yeah, this is more like it. I was there with two brothers from Baltimore, one brother from Chicago. So we're like, this is, see, our people, brother, that's where we want to be.
Yeah.
We're not Hollywood, we neighborhood. And we really love being around our people.
Familiar setting.
Come on, bro. So when we get there, first thing, people looking at us like, who the the hell are these dudes like coming in fully suited? First of all, it's hot and we all wear black. That's the other thing. They like, all right, hold on, man. It's like a movie.
I see you had like a turtleneck on.
Yeah. People really was like, y'all crazy. Y'all crazy as hell. Like, you gotta be out of town or something. We was like, yeah, man. I was like, yeah, I'm from the West Coast, et cetera. But I said, we just came from doing a music video and everything. They're like, music video. They said, oh, y'all the brothers, because they saw our pin that said, you know, in the name of Allah. He was like, oh, so y'all in the nation. Okay. They said, oh, man, well, yeah, the brothers do be coming in here, man. We appreciate y'all brothers. They said, if we didn't know it was y'all, we would have told y'all to get up out of here. Mm-hmm. That's how real they was. It was like, look, we would have just told y'all to get up out of here because y'all ain't about nothing. That's what they were saying. And we start talking to them. Turns out one of them is one of the biggest rappers from that block. Mm-hmm. You know, we had no idea. We didn't know who it was, but this is how Allah works, how God works. So we talking to them. They talking about business. They start asking us questions. Right. How did you get out the hood? We was like, get out. We still live in the hood. They was like, you live in the hood? You looking like that? We said, yeah, bro. So the mindset, we were working on the mindset of our brothers because they couldn't believe it. Like, y'all talk like this. You walk like this. You still in the hood. And why did y'all come in here? We said, because we wanted to come talk to y'all. The brother said, yeah, this brother from the West Coast, Brother Reza, he came out here from the West Coast. He told us to take him to the hood. And I said, don't give me no downtown, nice little, no, I need, bro, bring me where it's popping off at. Where the news is saying is the worst areas, right. Bring me there. That's where I want to go, because that's home for us. So when we got in there, bro, it was like, they just couldn't believe it. And they said, y'all not selling us nothing? Y'all ain't trying to like, you know? We said, no, sir, we just want to talk to you. It blew their mind. They said, damn, man, that's love, bro. And after that, we had a conversation. We were there for about a good 2 hours. It was like, look, man, whenever y'all come in the old block, bro, hit us up. We're going to get all the brothers and sisters come out. Y'all can talk to them, whatever y'all want to do, man, because that's love.
That's
bro.
How it should be.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, that's representation. Like, and that's kind of what you've been saying from the beginning. It's just like, yo, a lot of times we don't aspire to be things because we've never seen it. So, like, to see that type of love and come into your neighborhood, that's what should be the response to it.
Yeah. And it was different brothers from different neighborhoods in different cities and different states. Yeah. So two brothers from Baltimore, one brother from Compton, one brother from Chicago. First of all, y'all not fighting? That's the first thing. Y'all ain't fighting? That's the first thing. And then secondly, y'all all came in here with the same message, and it's all about love and just talking to each other and building up each other. We talked about business and economics with them. We did.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about brotherhood. We talked about bringing unity to the hood and what y'all doing. What do you need help with? Like, what do y'all need? Y'all got food in here? You got water? Like, what's going on? And they were just educating us. They said, man, y'all some real brothers, man. So they all gave us their number. They said, but whenever y'all need to come up in here, we'll take you wherever the people are who need food. We know where the elders live at, where the children at. Y'all let us know, bro. We gonna, you know, bring y'all around.
It's powerful.
You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. It's about touching the people.
Yes, sir.
And you can't be afraid of your own people. And it's interesting, too, because it's like different environments. It's like, because even, you know, we're from New York. So, you know, like, you think of, like, the slums in New York. Like, you think of housing projects, which is, like, you know, tenement buildings. They're very large, like 20 stories, 15 stories. But we driving through South Central, it looks like a nice neighborhood. Like, in reality, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's kind of surprising because it's like.
East Coast don't trip. Listen, we got our hoods may look different.
No. So I'm saying it's like, you know what I mean? As far as the I feel like sometimes the mindset, like, can place a good neighborhood and make it bad.
Yeah,
like, you know what I'm saying? It's like the resources might be there to actually make it a good neighborhood, but, you know, other elements can turn it to a bad neighborhood. But on the outside looking in, it doesn't necessarily fit the description of what a slum or a bad neighborhood would be.
That's true. It's not a favela.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially if you grew up in it. You can't really tell the difference. A lot of these children, like I said, when I was walking in there and just watching them play around, throw football, and we threw the football around with them and everything. They couldn't tell we in the living projects. Like, this is our home.
Yeah, it's like that bubble mentality. Exactly. It's like, yo, I wish, and working in the inner city, it was like, I lived 8 miles from where I was teaching. So I was like, I used it in my mind, like, I really wish these kids could just see what 8 miles away looks like.
Come on, bro.
Like, it's just 8 miles away, like just a bus ride away, how much different life looks. Because they just live in this bubble world where it's like, this is all they know. But a lot of them,
but also it goes back, I think, to appreciation. Because, like, we talk about Harlem, and it's like, all right, you see it being gentrified at a very alarming rate.
Big time. Mm-hmm.
And you see Bed-Stuy being gentrified at a very alarming rate. Mm. But it's like, a lot of times we don't fully appreciate it until it's being taken. Right, because it's like, even in New York, like, there's projects, but then there's a neighborhood called Stuyvesant Town. So Stuyvesant Town literally looks like projects. It's the same thing, but that's not projects, not public housing. It's just regular people live there, even wealthy people live there, but the upkeep of the buildings are way better. So it's like, it's an interesting dynamic because it's like, all right, so that now, like, even where and where we live in our neighborhood, there's a public housing project and they've turning it into luxury buildings, but they're keeping the residents there, and then they're like, it's gonna be like mixed use. So the theory, I was talking to the one of the developers, and he was like, the theory behind it is that if you give people a sense of pride where they live, they're gonna take better care of it. And now the mindset of I'm living in the project, so I don't mind it being bad, is that now I'm living in luxury.
Right.
So it's a responsibility to upkeep. So what I'm saying is that I just think that we should have that same mindset no matter what, because it's upkeep. Because like, even with, I see like the nation, like you pick up garbage on the streets and stuff like this, like little stuff like that, like just littering. You don't really think about it, but it goes a long way. Yeah, before absolutely. You know it, it's like the whole, it's like a domino effect.
Yeah. I think that's one of the conversations we had. It was like, yo, if I gave you a Bentley, you're going to treat it like a Bentley. I gave you a Toyota, you're not going to treat it like it was a Bentley. You're just going to look, oh, it's a Toyota. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We got Toyota like it is a Bentley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See that, like you said, see, you made a very good point when you said we don't appreciate things until they're taken away from us. That's a big deal, because now people are talking about gentrification, but it's like you say, you be, you know, littering, you be doing all kinds of throwing stuff out the window. You don't clean up around the neighborhood. You know, like this is yours. But if you don't treat it like it's yours, then of course somebody else is going to claim it. You know, right now we have on 88th in Vermont over in LA, these new housing units that they just put up. And I'm like, okay, it's usually a lot of homeless right there. It's a lot of neighborhoods right there. You know, it's right down the street from Vermont and Manchester.
That's South Central?
That's South Central. This is LA. I'm like, so who the hell invested right there in that area? Because I know we didn't do it. Secondly, who's going to be living in there? Because I know it's not going to be us living in there. So to me, I'm like, see, now we got to change this up, because the moment they start coming back in, we can't complain because it's too late now. We need to be pooling our resources, our money right now, and start to buy up piece by piece, and which is what we are doing. You know, some of us are doing it. Others are not doing it. But as a people, we got to get into that mentality of, yeah, you may not have all the money as an individual.
Right.
You're living in the projects. You got $20, though. You got 20, your next door neighbor got 20. Each person in the projects, y'all can come up with a 20. We can all put that together, and then we can start buying up plots of land, and then we can start building on it. That's how the mentality is supposed to be.
Yeah, then it becomes ours, right? Yeah. Now it doesn't become something we're renting, and it was like, oh, we can't pass that down.
And we interviewed Chris Senegal. He's a real estate developer in Houston, Texas. So what he's doing is interesting. He brought like a whole block in the Fifth Ward, which at the time was a really bad neighborhood. It was like prostitutions, liquor stores. And it was pretty dilapidated. So he renovated the whole block, townhouses. But what he's doing is that, so it's like, all right, usually somebody from the hood does good. They become a doctor, a lawyer, whatever. They move to the suburbs. So he's like, all right, those people that are originally from the Fifth Ward that moved to the suburbs, he's like recruiting them to come back.
That's how you
so
do
it's
it.
Like, you know what I mean? Like it's now powerful. You bring him back. So it's not even like you're compromising the economy,
right?
Because but now it's raising, but now it's helping everybody because the school system and that. But it's people that actually care for the community and a part of the culture because
it came from it,
as opposed to somebody that just has nothing to do with the community at all.
Build up the hood, do not abandon the hood. That's how it is. You know, a lot of us see. Funny thing is, now a lot of people who left the hood now they're looking to the hood because the activists have become the celebrities. What y'all do in the neighborhood? I come down there, it's like, shouldn't have left, right? But it shouldn't take all that. But now, I'm very proud of that brother for doing that, because that's exactly what needs to happen. Whatever hood you came from, it's really like, adopt the hood. That's yours. Adopt it, man. What you doing? Like, it's like a newborn baby. You just left it. No, it's your hood. It's where you came from. It's what gave you your foundation, good or bad. It's what up to make you what you are. So go and adopt it. You don't have to buy everything, but at least buy something. And like you said, start to renovate it, revamp it, reestablish it, and build it up so that the hood's value can go up. People can feel good. Like, damn, that's in the hood, man. That look good. Yeah. You know, somebody might tag on it. You got to handle them. You know what I mean? But you got to, it's a process.
Yeah.
You know, it's a process. And once you start doing that, like Big Business said, like you are the comps, right?
Yeah.
So now like this house is yours, the one next door, y'all own it, y'all set the comps, the appreciation of the neighborhood goes up.
Hire the people in the hood, man. That homeless dude, hire him. Since you sitting right here, all right, I'm gonna make you the person who watches. Take this radio, and if you see anybody trying to tag, go ahead and radio us, let us know. We're gonna pay you a couple hundred a week to start, and we're gonna clean you up. You know, I'm serious, like this is really how it is. You hire them, you know, say, look, you gonna work for me. You don't need whatever, just come on, boom. You gonna work here, you need a job, you're 15, come on. We got something you can sweep up, you can help to paint. Whatever, that's how it is. We think a little too deep when it comes to this stuff. It's very, very, very simple. couple hundred dollars can go a long way for one person to help them and their family, and you can give them a job that takes maybe less than 2 hours to train them to do that will help to go toward the collective. You know what I'm saying? It's real simple stuff, man.
You brought up a good point where you just said that the activist has become the celebrities.
Oh, yes.
And
don't get mad, y'all, right? Damn, what is what it is.
No. It's true, especially with social media, the rise of social media.
Yes.
So I see a lot of stuff that you do, and but one thing that I'm interested in is like your branding. Because like I feel like you've branded yourself your own way. It's kind of like I don't know if you ever heard of Wallow 267?
Oh yeah, love my brother.
Yeah, that's my guy. Shout out to Wallow. He's been on the podcast as well. Another one. He's just very interesting. He has an interesting story, and he came out. He's a motivational speaker, and he did 20 years in jail. So, but you're branding yourself from a political standpoint, an activist standpoint, but it's still a brand.
Absolutely.
Right? So, like, what was your thought process behind that? Did you originally set out to become a social media influencer? And how did you build that brand? How did that happen?
I'll say this. First of all, I never intended to be no social media influencer. not even close. I've been doing this work, meaning activism, being a researcher, educator. I've been doing this since I was 11 years old. In the hood, in Compton, specifically at a nonprofit social betterment literacy program. That's where I was working since I was 11 years old. So the people coming into the program was Blacks, Mexicans, people who were on drugs, people who were on probation, just got out of jail, trying to get their children back, people who couldn't read, couldn't write, people who were having to go to this program in order for them to get their children back, in order for them to get their rights back or whatever. All this stuff, this is what I've been doing since I was 11 years old. So teaching people, educating people, cleaning up, you know, the community, being in the community, all this stuff is what I've been doing long before Instagram was even created in 2012. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's why when people talk to me, they're like, man, how do you study? And it just comes so natural. I'm like, because I do it in real life. Like, some of y'all started on social media, right? Now they're trying to bring it to the street. I started in the street and brought it to social media. Yeah. That's the difference. And that's not to belittle anybody. You know, it's the beauty is good. Wherever we are, good. Keep progressing. But I started and am still in the street as an educator, you know, activist, et cetera, researcher. So I saw social media and I noticed, okay, well, man, if I can educate the people, I know our attention span kind of short. We got 60 seconds. Let me do what I can. And I do, you know, speak kind of fast. So maybe we can do something with this. And like you said, so I started doing videos and they started flying real quick. I was like, oh, well, dang, okay. Well, I guess this is what I'm going to start doing just to help the people more than my immediate environment.
Yeah.
And it took off. So, I mean, I just, you know, now they haven't shut me down yet, but we know you're working. So, I mean, I'm surprised I'm still, you know, I'm really surprised they still let me on.
No shadow bans yet. No shadow bans yet.
Man, I'm telling you.
Nah, they let you rock. Your videos be getting a lot of views. I see
that. Appreciate that.
So speaking of social media and its positive or negative impact, one of the things you said is that right now, this might be the most ignorant generation, despite having the most access and resources to information.
Yes, sir.
Can you go into that a little bit?
Absolutely. This generation, first of all, Minister Farrakhan says, is the most powerful generation that has ever been produced, number one. We don't fear this system. We don't really care about what white people got to say. We really don't care about what anyone has to say as this generation. We really are just ripe and ready to do whatever needs to be done for our freedom. All we need is proper guidance. That's it. So we have the whole world in our hands, but we don't know where to go. We looking at nothing but, you know, twerking, TikTok, whatever, hit the wall all day. You know, like, I love dancing, so I can't hate on that, but at the same time, it's like, damn, we can utilize this to make some change, bro. I mean, we can create an entire revolution just from this.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So we need just the right guidance. So the ignorance, meaning the lack of information, the lack of knowledge.
Right.
So we lack the knowledge about a lot of things, what's going on politically, economically, agriculturally, with us as a people, with us as a nation, with us as a society. So we have to give them the knowledge that they need and then give them the guidance, because we got all the access to the information. So if I say, look, hashtag, you know, Black Cash Mob 2020, which is my hashtag, hashtag Black Cash Mob 2020, all black owned businesses, spending on all black everything.
Mm-hmm.
You send that around, that gets 10,000, 20,000, 40,000 shares. So you just created an entire revolutionary constructive change, and a lot of people can access and they can follow it and they can progressively do something in their community wherever they are. They're not next to you, they're in another city, another state, another country, but they are being involved in something that you originated that spreads across the ethers of the universe. That right there, bro, is That's the power we have now. Yeah. We just have to keep them being guided in the right direction. That's the only
thing. Got to know what to look for.
That's it. They just need to know. Like, yeah. what do I do? Where do I go?
I want to ask you about Kingdom Pay, and I want to talk about your book as well.
Yes.
But I have one question before. AI, artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. Is something that we've talked about a lot mm-hmm. on our platform. Mm-hmm. And because I remember, like, in New York, there's tolls. There's a lot of tolls.
Yes, yes.
And I remember when those were jobs, people, you know, you would give them $5 and they give you $4 back or whatever, and they break the change for you. And that's what they stood in the booth all day, mm-hmm. summertime, winter, and, you know, they got paid $15 an hour, whatever they got paid, and that was a job for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And there's no, everything is through cameras now. Yeah. And they take pictures and they send you either Easy Pass or they send you a bill in the mail. Mm-hmm. And now we see with Amazon Go stores,
yeah.
where there's no cashiers and you just all walk robots. Out the store. It's just, yeah. So mm-hmm. Andrew Yang spoke about this. Yeah. He got a lot of publicity for it mm-hmm. when he said that, you know, it's going to be an economic tidal wave.
Yep.
I believe he said an economic tidal wave that's going to disproportionately hit the black and brown communities
yep.
because, unfortunately, these are the people that have most of the lower paying jobs and manual jobs, right? What are your thoughts on artificial technology? Mm-hmm. How do we get on the right? Because I look at it like it's not going anywhere.
Right. True.
It's only going to be, so it's like we can complain about it's taking up jobs or mm-hmm. we can try to get on a different side of this thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a real situation and it's going to only more and more jobs, I think, are just going to be lost. Because it's just more efficient
yeah.
from a business standpoint. So right. what's your thoughts on that?
I'll say it this way. That's where when your first question dealing with capitalism, now we are back at it now on the negative end. Because if you're willing to hire a robot versus a man who has been doing this for 20 years, probably went to school for it, or if it's just a warehouse job, he's a good worker. He's, you know, he comes in on time. Young brother, he's like 25 years old. You know, he got two children. He works hard. That's what he does. You'd rather not do that because of the higher liability, et cetera. He may get injured, sue you, whatever. All right, I put a robot there. Business-wise, sounds very sound. I mean, yeah, a robot gets, you know, beat up, whatever, don't matter. You know, I get it's a robot. Damn it, I buy another one, whatever. Or I have insurance on it. Sounds amazing. Here's the problem. How many robots, how many jobs, first of all, do you think it will take for the system to understand that eventually it's going to hit you, the rich, the people making all the money? Because after a certain point, you can't have robots for everything. This is where these futuristic movies come into play when it comes to all the way from Terminator, all the way over to iRobot. It's, I know I'm dropping a lot of names. All these different things where people have to understand the moment you start making technology and you give it artificial intelligence, you're now delving into the area of God after a certain point. Like giving robots citizenship.
In Saudi Arabia.
In yeah. Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Now she got her driver's license. Now it's like, okay, well, hold on. See, what you doing?
She has a driver's license? That's crazy.
It's like, what the hell are you doing here? what are you doing? There is a limit here. Yeah. You know, like, we have to maintain our humanity. Money cannot be your God. That's why with some people, they say they believe in God, but people, when it comes to money, some of them believe in God, gold, oil, and drugs. God.
Yeah.
Mm. Not actual, you know, the supreme being, etc. You have to look at your humanity here. Is that much money worth it? Where I gotta be a billionaire, a trillionaire, and all that, but at the expense of people who actually live their lives. This is where that evil and wicked type of mentality goes. So we have to be very mindful here. You can still employ people, have your robots, etc. But if you want to have robot technology, okay, good. Help them go clean up the neighborhoods. Send robots to go help the people who are homeless, people who are, you know, medically handicapped, etc. There are many different areas that we need it. But y'all gonna send it to the jobs to take it away from the people who are actually working hard to take care of their family. So I'm not interested in the way they're doing it. The issue is that they're going to keep doing it as long as the people allow it, and also as long as the people keep putting their hands out for these jobs rather than doing for self.
Yeah.
Rather than pooling your resources with your own community, your own people, and setting up your own companies, your own jobs to where you will survive. Because this whole economic situation, bro, blacks and Mexicans for the majority, we are the warehouse workers. We are the bus boys. We are the ones who work for these cab companies. We are the ones who work being waiters and waitresses and all this kind of stuff. All of these jobs, bro, the people who do
Subway,
all yeah. this stuff, we are the workers for that. So pretty much all of those they can replace with robotics. And they have looked at that. That's why he was saying that. Yeah. He was like, you know, I think he said about a year, what was it? Did he say 2050 or 2032? One of those two. He said a large chunk of the jobs are going to be replaced by robots.
Yeah.
Because that's they're projecting it because they're planning it. And it's very sound. So again, we got to get back to us building our own things and doing for self, because the corporatocracy, this corporate government and system, they are going to do what they want to do. But if they don't have our cooperation and our involvement, then it won't affect us. We got to pull out of this system, bro, and establish our own. That's really the only way we're going to survive this, to be honest with you.
That's crazy that you said that. I actually really wrote that down, the gold, oil, and drugs. Because that's a conversation Shadi and I, we always have. And I'm like, yo, you can't serve two masters. So like that used to be like my brother, he's actually a pastor now, but we used to have this conversation like, you can't serve two masters. You're going to love one and hate the other. Yeah. That would lead to like a 3-hour conversation about money. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, before we go there, be interested in technology. Let me not, you know, like that's what I forgot to say. Be invested in it, learn it, understand how it works, and then also use it for us as a people. We need to have technology. When it comes to virtually everything, we just don't need to overwhelmingly use it to where we say, okay, good, I'm gonna use all this technology and not give the way for my brothers and sisters to make their own money and to have a livelihood. No, let's use it to help us to maintain a livelihood and to build a livelihood. That's what we have to do. So we have to use it for the progressive way rather than it, you know, being a heavy, wicked capitalistic way of, I'm gonna just make all this and I don't give a damn if you eat or you eat, it's all about me.
So speaking of technology, Kingdom Pay.
Yes, sir.
Can we talk about Kingdom Pay?
Yes, sir. Kingdom Pay, partially owned by Brandon T. Jackson, another brother, myself. It is the black-owned version of Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So people's like, finally. Yeah, it's legit. Yes, it's legit. We have some of the top people in these top companies, people who have been training these companies, been doing this for a long time. Very powerful. It almost seemed impossible, you know, when I was approached with that idea. And when they brought it to me and they said, brother, this is what we're doing, this is what it is, you know, everything's set up. And I was like, finally, because this is what it means to do for self. We need to be able to have a way to transfer and send and receive our own money. Because if we start getting our own money, cool. But if we're still transferring and using their systems with which to move it, then they still have our control. Or we're still under their control. So we have to have a way to move around our own money. So Kingdom Pay, that's what it is. And it's because Kingdom pays. It's not about your religious group. It's about, do you believe in God, the kingdom, you know, the kingdom, the king that sits on the dome of your mind, whatever you call God, him, it, her, whatever. Do you just believe that there's a supreme being? Boom, that's all that matters. We're not about all that nonsense. Because again, when it comes to money, the color lines shouldn't matter. But when it comes to the control of your money, everyone should have their ability to control their own.
So Kingdom Pay is through an app and a website?
Oh yeah, through an app.
It's out right now?
It is about to launch. It's a soft launch right now. We're talking about it. You know, it is. Go download it. Definitely. And it is free to download. Same thing as Cash App, PayPal, all of that. And it does all of the same things. And you also are able to invest in Bitcoin. You're able to have your digital wallet. All the same stuff that you
would. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. No, it's legit. Y'all definitely got to check it out, man.
Yeah. When it drops, let us know. When it officially drops, let us know. And we could.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I'll make that announcement.
For sure. Speaking of crypto, I've seen you spoke about crypto a lot. What are your thoughts on crypto?
Yeah, We've had some experiences about
crypto.
You kind of talked about we got to find some new currencies, and I'm like, all right, well, what's your thoughts on crypto?
Right. Well, first of all, there's so many of them, man. There's so many now. I mean, it started with one, and from my understanding, was created by a Japanese man who goes under another alias so that he wouldn't be tracked and traced, because this is something.
Satoshi, right?
Yeah.
Satoshi Nakamoto.
Man.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yo,
I'm telling you.
That was good. Yo, this guy,
I gotta work
this dude never gets a name right. Now he got that one.
I'm telling you. But it's a trip, man, because now you're looking at a currency that is universal that can be used virtually anywhere. That is a very dangerous thing
game,
for America.
Game changer.
Oh, that's a game changer, because it's like, wait. And in America, there are certain places where they have ATMs now. Bitcoin ATMs, Las Vegas.
Atlanta. I saw Atlanta.
So it's like, oh, it's legit.
Yeah.
It's real. When it first started, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I believe, a little over 10 years ago, people were investing in it. The Bitcoins were like, I think, $1. Some of them were like 30, 40 cents, maybe $2 or $3. People who invested in that 10 years ago are millionaires now.
There's a guy, you know the pizza story? Yeah, so there's a guy, if anybody's not familiar, when Bitcoin first came out, this guy, he was like just testing out Bitcoin, and it was a pizzeria, and he exchanged with the equivalent, he bought a slice of pizza with
the amount of Bitcoin
that he had now, I think would have been worth like $18 million, something like that.
Yeah, $18 million pie.
$18 million pizza pie. Oh, so that's
wow.
Talk about a mistake. But it's crazy because Bitcoin, we've talked about Bitcoin on the platform before, but it's one of these things that's quietly creeping. It's almost at like 12,000.
Yeah,
right now,
definitely
right?
Was over 11.
It peaked at 12,000, at 20,000 years ago, and then it crashed, and then it got as low as like 3,700 a few months ago. But now it's like rising, like upwards of close to 12,000 on a low.
Like, you don't really nobody's watching.
Nobody's even talking about it.
Yeah. And see, and that's why we have to, you know, when I talk about it, and there are different forms of it. That's the main thing people have to know. There are so many different forms. There's so many different names, etc. Be mindful, be educated, get with people who are experienced in that.
That's
because
the key.
You can lose everything.
Yeah.
You can buy this and it's gone tomorrow. And that's the
We are proponents of that. And like we tell everybody all the time, we have lost money. We've literally lost money. Like we try to make a trade and it disappeared.
Sent it to the wrong
address.
Wallet.
Disappeared.
Address.
Like literally it's in crypto space.
That kind of stuff happens too. So just be careful, be mindful, have somebody who's experienced. Really experience, successfully experience, and then work with them, and then start low. Don't toss your whole damn. I got $30,000 in my savings.
Yeah.
Do not just go drop everything.
Yeah, invest what you are willing to lose.
Exactly.
When I knew that it was real, and I forget the CEO of Ripple, but they had asked him this question. He was like, "Yo, what's the fastest way to get money from San Francisco to London?" And somebody said a wire transfer, and they was like, "Nope, that's gonna take 2 to 3 days." And they were like, put it through the bank. They were like, no, that type of money, doing like over 200,000, it's gonna take 7 to 10. And he was like, you know the fastest way? Get on a plane with 250,000 and go to London. That's the fastest way.
And that's real.
And that's why we have cryptocurrency.
That's real.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
See, and mind you, see, people are, you gotta understand this, when it comes to the physical money and the crypto, again, be smart about both. The gold, you gotta look at it, again, because we see gold is rising. The silver coins, the pre-1933 silver coins, you got to look at those. You know, there are different things that you have to look at because, as I said, the American dollar is going down. So because of that, now we're forced to look at other forms of currency. We just have to be smart about which ones we choose and how much we invest in each one. You know, whichever one has been seen to be the most valuable, the most solid, the longest record, gold never is going to lose value. Right, that's the physical asset. Good. Silver, etc., and whatever other ones that you have seen that have that type of longevity, those are the ones you want to stick with first. And then, of course, you can look at the other forms of currency. If you're living in Africa, okay, check those out. You're living in Mexico, you're living in wherever. Look at how you can invest and transfer into those. When I went to China, I didn't know that I was supposed to go to the currency exchange area in the international terminal of the airport. I didn't know I was supposed to give them my like $200-$300 there and then they'll give me back the currency, you know, Chinese currency. I didn't know that. I'm on a plane like $400 in American currency. I get out there in China, I'm trying to buy some food. And they're like, they're looking at me like,
they look at you crazy.
Your money's no good here.
Yeah, exactly. Bro, that's when I said, oh, I get it now. Okay. See, when you leave the country, you feel it.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. You know, especially like
America's dollar is not accepted everywhere.
Yeah.
Now.
China, Europe. Because it's stronger. Europe is stronger. Even in Europe, it's crazy because I was in Europe and I was in France. Mm-hmm. I tried to use an American dollar and they was looking at me like I was crazy, like because it's less worse than the euro. So I had to get euros. And then I went to London. And then I tried to use the euro in London and they looked at me like I was crazy
because
the euro's worth less than the pound.
Come on.
So it's it's
a real thing. You got to research it. And especially if you want to travel. If you want to leave the country, you have to understand, okay, America's dollar is worth a dollar here, one of the euros, or it's worth half a euro, okay? So I need two American dollars for 1 euro, for an example. Then you have to look at, okay, how much money do I have to bring out there to actually make the equivalent of what I think is going to be worth out here?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to understand.
Yeah.
You know, but we really do have to look at other forms of currency is my point. We have to look at it. Like, we don't have a choice. Look at silver, look at gold, and again, different forms of Bitcoin, have experts or get training. There's something that we're going to launch as well when it comes to that, an online academy for people to be able to take trainings in those areas because that's what we need to learn, that as well as real estate, etc. But it's really that time, bro, so we have to look at other forms of currency.
So message to the millennials, can you talk about Can you talk about the book and what it entails? Mm-hmm. And yeah, what's the science behind that?
Message to the millennials. If you flip it over on the back, you'll see a picture of myself. You see Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, okay. Mr. Farrakhan, because this book was inspired by Message to the Black Man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the same book again that Nip gave to T.I., the same book that has been read by well over 10 million people, that has sparked the consciousness of millions of people. And this one, I said, okay, for this generation, we need to know about some of the top topics affecting us as a people and then us as a human family on the planet. I need to put something in a book that if they shut my social media platforms down, this will be a guide for this generation to help them to navigate through what's going on. That's really what I looked at. And the tipping point for me was in 2018, I believe, or 2017, pardon me, the FBI classified black people, black youth, who are interested in loving our people, being passionate, but also who are fearless and who will stand up to police brutality. They are now labeling us as BIEs, or Black Identity Extremists. Mm. It's like, wait a minute, so you call
Black Identity Extremists?
Black Identity Extremists.
Okay.
So they came out with that, which is basically a cold term for COINTELPRO 2020, you know, where they're going to try to infiltrate the black revolutionary groups and organizations that really are us just standing up and saying we demand justice, you know, we want freedom, we want equality. You know, we're not trying to go out here and kill police and kill white folks. Like, that's not what we are about at all. But if the people are to understand what's going on, they need to have somebody to give them something specifically in this generation. One, this generation doesn't read that much, okay, which it works both sides of the brain, so reading is very important. But two, I said, I got to give them something that's going to go over social media, first of all, because I couldn't find a book that was really going over heavily social media. Chapter two is in there. The book goes over tell-lie vision programming. They're telling you lies. They're programming you visually by telling you lies.
Nice.
Okay, so they got that in there. It goes over some of the mind control projects that are established through social media and through television, et cetera. It goes over unity and pulling our resources, our economics, and it goes over some of the cities more than just Tulsa, Oklahoma, more than just Rosewood, more than just Central Avenues here in LA, more. It goes over a lot of the different cities that we owned, where we were thriving, we were flourishing, we have businesses, et cetera. It goes over all of that. That's the last chapter, which is talking about pulling our resources, establishing our own, everything, et cetera. It goes over a lot of stuff, bro. A lot of stuff that this generation needs to know about so that they can navigate through this system. It's plain and simple. So I said, I got to find a way to put it in a physical form to get it out of here, because they're going to shut us down. They're going to censor us at a certain point.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I know so. I know. That's the other thing. I was looking at Congress, who were trying to propose a bill to censor anyone talking about conspiracy. Anyone talking about
any type of conspiracy?
Any type of conspiracy. Conspiracy is not a bad word. It simply means when two or more groups, people, organizations are coming together to do something that is evil and or wicked. That's what conspiracy means. So that's not bad. Now, conspiracy theory is different, but conspiracy is not a bad thing. So America's trying to cover herself by saying we're going to take down all the videos on YouTube. We're going to take down the videos on Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, where it's talking about what we're actually doing. And we are going to censor, which is destroying the freedom of speech, which is in the First Amendment, freedom of religion, speech, press, petition, and assembly. I said, if they do that to this generation, which is the social media generation, and we can't access the truth entirely from those who are really bringing out the facts, then damn it, they're going to have their information completely sifted and controlled, and they will be mentally manipulated. I said, I can't let that happen. So I had to put those things in a book. And it has now been called the number one handbook for this generation. It's been selling very well. This is my first product. I've been doing this work in the community, in the streets. Never had any products. I've never been about products, selling stuff. I've been about doing the community work. But, you know, once you start realizing bills, got to get paid, got to find a way to, you know, hey, it is what it is.
This is your first book.
First book. And first of many.
You published it yourself?
Yes, sir. Self-published. I created my own publishing company again.
Where can they get it from?
RezaIslam.com. Mm-hmm. You can go get it there. Of course, you click the link in my bio on Instagram, but RezaIslam.com. It is not going through Amazon. It's not
not giving them 30%.
Nah,
30%.
30 to 40.
Nah.
What is it?
Derek Gray spoke to us about that.
Oh, yeah. No. Like you said, hire your family and let them do it. Like I said, my packagers, my product handlers, my product managers, all of them, that's my family. They are paid to do that. A living wage. You see what I'm saying? Like, we can do that. And so when you realize that you're buying this, first of all, the information that's in here, a lot of people... of course, I go over one major chapter is chapter 6. It's depopulation. Okay, it goes over genetically modified organisms, it goes over vaccines, it goes over a lot of stuff like that. A lot of the information in this book is very heavy information that I broke down in as easily understandable ways as possible. But I've had certain scientists read this, certain celebrities read this, and they hit me and they're like, listen, that's some heavy stuff in that book. Like, that's some really heavy stuff, which is why I said, I'm not putting this on Amazon. I'll be damned if they ban my book and cut off the money and cut off everything. I'm like, nah, because now there are families that rely on this. So yeah. When people realize that when they buy this book, you're getting knowledge, which is totally invaluable, and it's worth far more than what you purchase for, but you're also supporting families too, black families. You see what I'm saying? That's what y'all preach. That's what y'all teach. That's what we have to continue to understand, is if there's something of value that is going to bring you solutions to help you in your condition, and you're helping your people at the same time, that's what it's about. You see what I'm saying? So
that's the win-win right there.
It's a win-win, bro. Yes, sir.
Reza Islam, it's been a pleasure, brother.
Yo, man.
It's been a pleasure.
Honored, this is well worth the wait, man.
Man. My apologies, man. But I'm honored again. I love the interview, brothers. I love the fact that you are educating our people about economics, because from Marcus Garvey down to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even all the way down to our brother, Dr. Claude Anderson, with Powernomics. You know, we have to take this on and really stop being the victim to everything that's going on. We can be the ones who create, we can establish, we can build, we can do this. Like, it's really not hard. We can actually do it. So I appreciate you, brothers, for doing what you're doing, because I've been watching your network and y'all been consistent.
I appreciate it, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
Any last words you want to leave the people? How can they follow you on your social media handles, website, all that stuff?
Yes, sir. Everything is under Reza Islam. Everything's under Reza Islam until it gets shut down. Hopefully not. And if they try to shut it down, I'm going to be on other independent apps as well. And I'm serious about that. But, you know, it is what it is. Continue to learn, family. I just say that. Continue to learn. Don't be afraid. Pull your resources. Don't think that you need to have a lot of money to be independent. Don't think you need to continue to work for somebody when you can establish your own and do something for yourself. You can come together as a group, your family, your friends, the, you know, like I said, whatever hood you're from, and establish something. Find the need, see the need of the people, and provide a solution for it. It's real simple. That's why you see the young brothers selling water on the corners. You see people selling food, candy, masks. Now everybody, you know, they
we're gonna find a way. We're gonna find a way. We're gonna find a way.
We are economic kingpins out here. You know, when we wanna, like, we do it. So just see the need of the people and find a solution for it. And you can make money off of helping your people with something that they actually need. So don't think too much about it. Really look at five things that you can establish and bring your people together, your family, your colleagues, friends, etc. And yeah, man, let's really come up out of the situation. We're not going down with this government, damn it. We're not going down with it.
No, sir.
No, sir.
Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. That is our Proud to Pay program. We have five tiers. Big shout out to our two newest members, LaRon and Jamira. They are tier 5 members, so we're going to be speaking to them very shortly. And everybody knows, if you're tier 4 or 5, you have access to EYL University. That is our online school, the number one business school in the world. Shout out to everybody that's been supporting there, and everybody that's been getting the merch from earnyourleisure.com. We got new flavors up there, and we're trying to wear new shirts every day out here. Yeah. So shout out to everybody that's been supporting. We love you. Keep supporting.
Yeah, for sure. And once again, man, thank you to California. We love it out here. LA, move out here, man.
Welcome you, brother.
I love it out
here. Shout out to the East Coast. We love y'all. Yeah.
We got to make our way to Compton before we go.
Yeah, that's a fact. I was telling him the other day, I'm like, yo, let's go to Compton, man. Like, I just want
to
just
go.
Should we do? I'm going to ask you off camera.
By the time they hear this, we won't be there.
For sure. But, thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace. Yeah.